Well, for this week's SLA report, we have Ibrahim Fakir on the line. Ibrahim, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Nice to chat to you again.
Let's start with the DA. They had some major defections in the last while. Agushwele Ghana, the national leader of the DA, Gauteng Provincial Legislature, MPL. He was in the party for close on 25 years. He resigned from the party 2 weeks ago. He said he's not leaving politics. It's not clear as to what exactly he's going to be doing going forward. Then earlier this week, Patricia Kopane announced her resignation from the party before joining Action SA. She was the DA's Free State leader between 2012 and 2020. She was also an MP. She was with the party for 19 years. She said she no longer feels like she belongs in the DA anymore. Then yesterday, the bombshell, Natasha Mazzoni, the DA's former chief whip, was no longer the chief whip, many interpreting it as a demotion, and she will be replaced now by Siviwe Garubi. Is this a reaction to the accusation that the DA doesn't have black leaders and members anymore? And is the DA hemorrhaging as a party, Brian?
It's possible, Molana, on the first question, that it's a reaction to the kind of accusations that, look, all the black leaders are leaving and they either going to Action SA or they're joining some other political movement. The truth, though, is that it's either one of that they've made a strategic decision to redeploy the chief whip to another position, to a position in which he might be more suited, or they might believe that a younger black leader in the positioning is going to do a better job as the chairperson, as the chief whip of the party. But you know, you have to think about the way in which the DA is often covered, and I think they often get unfair and uncritical coverage, in the sense that every time someone leaves, it's just a racial issue, it's a black leader who is going, it's a leader who's going because the party is no longer the same as it used to be. But the truth is, especially members who claim the DA now is not the DA I joined, but they don't tell you what is different about the party. They don't tell you what is different today about the DA compared to what the DA was 20 years ago, for example, when they joined it. So materially, what is the difference between what the DA does today and what did the DA do then? In my view, it seems like a very same party. There's nothing different about it. There's nothing fundamentally different in its approach to policy or to politics or to how it conducts oversight or what its ambitions are. So what is different between the party they join and the party they're going to is anyone's question. Might there be internal ructions? There probably are. But the internal ructions, as they've always been in the DA, are about the identity of the party, they're about the policy posture of the party, they're about how the party is going to position itself vis-a-vis other opposition parties. And those are ongoing debates which I think these members would probably have been engaged in all of this time. So why it happens now is fairly curious. Some people say there's a broad realignment going on amongst opposition politicians and amongst opposition politics. And maybe there's an element of truth. But to me, it seems as if much of it is much more a case of incremental advantage. So many of the new formations which are springing up are about ensuring people's career longevity. Sometimes people believe that they might get a better deal, they might, ascend to a different position if they go to a different party. Now, it might well be true that the DA is having internal problems, particularly on the question of race and how it's dealing with black members and so on. But it's impossible for me to tell, or for anyone to tell, and especially people from the media, to tell whether this is related to the positioning of the party if the members who are leaving aren't honest and aren't frank. And perhaps that's the problem of South African politics across the board. none of the politicians who leave a party will tell you why they are in fact leaving. They're cagey, they are opaque, they are never, hardly ever transparent, and they speak in riddles, you know. So Makhashele Ghana would say, no, I'm not leaving politics. But if you ask, are you going to Rivonia Circle? It says, no, that's a think tank. You know, they're not yet a party. But I want to contest for power. And the reason I left the DA, because they didn't contest the Mandela Bay election. And they didn't do that, and so therefore they don't have ambitions of being the party that they used to be. But there was probably a strategic reason. It was clear that they were going to lose. There's no point deploying resources in the in an instance where they're trying to gain. So, you know, it's hard to tell if people are not transparent about why they're leaving, why they're going to a different party, what their posture is, what is different between the party they claim to have joined and the party they believe it has become. So, I honestly often take this as a pinch of salt. With a pinch of salt, I would interpret the redeployment of one member to another position as something which is about a strategic posture of the party, about achieving particular gains and achieving particular goals. But, you know, it's anyone's guess. Of course, the DA has got race problems, but they've always had it. It's been a historical problem in the party. Have they got identity problems? Yes, they've always had it. They had it under Mosi Maimane, they had it under Helen Zeller, and they're having it under John Steenhuisen. Of course, you would have noticed, talking about the DA, that John Steenhuisen did a podcast yesterday with a very popular radio host, and suddenly, you know, there's all kinds of people, especially the very woke ones, because he made a few, perhaps slightly off-color jokes, but, you know, that's the nature of that radio show. And opinion is quite torn. Some people are saying, gosh, I didn't know that this guy could be so affable, that he could be so genuine, that he could be so funny. And actually, I have a new kind of, some people would say, not respect, I won't necessarily vote for them, but it's a politician I can listen to because, you know, our perceptions have been colored by his identity. And this is the problem of South African politics. If you listen to those who are too woke, you can't say anything about anything. You have to be absolutely politically correct all the time. And I think, unfortunately, you've been a victim. You've been a victim of this from time to time.
Yeah.
You miss the reality of what's going on in South African politics. So, you know, I think we must take all this stuff about, well, the DA is just a white party, they don't care about anything else. Then you've got to start taking some of these things with a pinch of salt and let's look objectively at what's going on.
Right, so from the DA to the EFF, Malema can't keep himself out of the public eye for very long. He had a press conference earlier this week, and he said that it was Thabo Mbeki who was behind Arthur Fraser laying these charges against President Ramaphosa when it came to Pala Pala Gate. And he said that Mbeki wants to take back control of the ANC. He also brought into the mix Marxist theory of dialectical materialism and Lenin, no less. And Mbeki hit back with that word, scuttlebutt. Many didn't know that the word existed. But seriously, surely all of this is just absurd, Ibrahim.
Yes and no. It's absurd in the sense that, we don't know, again, these rumors. You know, they run deep in the ANC. But perhaps many listeners don't remember, or perhaps some are too young, but I certainly do, in 2001, you will recall that the then Minister Steve Chwete, who was the Minister of Safety and Security, who under President Mbeki at the time, I remember he was the president, suddenly went on national TV as the Minister of Police and said there were rumors that Cyril Ramaphosa, Matthew Phosa, and Tokyo Sekgwale were involved in a plot to oust him. At that time, this had come completely out of the blue. 2 or 3 years later, it became slightly more clear by about 2003, 2004, when the rumblings inside the ANC were quite deep in the factional battle between, and at that time it was factional battle, because I know I've often been saying, you know, you can't always see what's going on in the ANC as factionalism. Some of it's factionalism. The ideas and people are moving day to day, you know, idea to idea. But anyway, at that time it was factionalism because, you know, Mbeki was aligned with certain specific ideas and Zuma was aligned with certain specific ideas. And two or three years later, it came to light that part of this may have been, you know, of part of the hysteria of one camp viewing itself under assault from another camp. So much of this runs quite deep. Now, whether Malema is talking truth, whether Malema is just putting out nonsense, as he often does, for profile, to be in the public eye, to be salacious, and to, because, you know, that's part of the agenda, cause further divisions and distraction inside the ANC. And distraction is a very interesting word, and I use it deliberately, because it is a distraction. We don't know whether this is true. Mbeki hits back with appropriate words, scuttlebutt, which actually means gossip, comes from the American kind of terminology where, you know, people used to gather around a water dispenser and gossip. So the meaning of the word scuttlebutt, we learned very early on in Madrasa, is a person who carries tales,
yeah.
something you mustn't be.
Yeah.
You know, you'll remember Appa telling you one of the biggest sins is you carry tales. So that's a scuttlebutt. And that is unfortunately what Mr. Malema is. Why, you know, some of the stuff is taken seriously in our politics is a little beyond. So I think Mbeki was correct. But Mbeki's also muddied the waters by saying, no, much of this comes from the old apartheid spy agencies, you know. So there's further intrigue around this because those people still want to divide the ANC and they want to split the ANC and they want to hold the ANC back from its reform movement. Now, how in any instance those people are still active is a little beyond me because, look, the ANC doesn't need any help in its internal divisions. They are doing very well all on their own. They don't need anyone to assist them in fomenting these divisions and distractions. So, look, I think Mr. Malema is, you know, very happy to put out this nonsense because of the distraction. ANC members start victimizing and pillaring each other and trying to identify who's who and who's where and who's doing what. And it serves his purposes very well. But, you know, there have always been perceptions that he's used by more senior people inside the ANC who are fighting their own little demons and battles, and he's a mere instrument that is often used for their purposes. You know, some people used to argue that, remember when he argued about wholesale nationalization of everything, there wasn't actually an ideological posture to assist large numbers of South Africans and have a redistributionary agenda. It was actually about helping BEE moguls who were given major shares at discounted prices and had bought them on loans and now they couldn't repay it. So the nationalization project helps them out. And that's why he was pushing for this kind of thing. So, you know, who really knows? The truth, again, is that it's a distraction. It's a non-issue, literally. And it's much of the salacious gossip which does the rounds in serious politics. But it's got nothing to do, just to be forthright. It has nothing to do with Lenin or dialectical materialism. I think that was just a moment of exuberance and perhaps Mr. Malema wanting to prove that, hey, I also know some political theory, you know.
Finally, then, the scandal around Finance Minister Enoch Godongwana, who's alleged to have engaged in inappropriate sexual harassment and behavior. Has he now appeared before the Integrity Commission? It's reported that he said that if he's formally charged, he will step aside. I mean, is this part of the posturing and positioning that we should expect ahead of the elective conference of the ANC in December?
Absolutely. But as you can see, this is a little beyond posturing. This is not about people, you know, positioning themselves behind one or other policy position. This is about actual skullduggery. And he's put out a statement not very long ago setting out a few things. And one of the things Mr. Godongwana claims is that he doesn't even know the identity of the complainant. So the police have told him, they've given him a warning, they issued a warning. But he says he has absolutely no idea of who the complainant is. So that sounds really curious. although he does confirm that the place at which the allegations were made, he was in that area, he was on holiday, it was somewhere in Mpumalanga, near the Kruger National Park. He admits that he was in that area. But he claims he has absolutely no idea who the complainant is. So, it's impossible to tell whether there's any kind of veracity to this allegation. The police will have to investigate. But absolutely, this is about jockeying towards the end of the year. And the markets are not going to take, or they don't take too kindly to this, because, you know, they're looking for certainty around the protection of the Treasury. As Minister of Finance and as NEC member, he's one of those aligned to President Ramaphosa. And I think, you know, depending on if he says he will voluntarily step aside, if much of this comes to light and the police go beyond a warning towards actually laying a charge, that he will, in compliance with the ANC's rule, step aside rule, he will step aside. That means that President Ramaphosa then has to provide a caretaker finance minister or a new finance minister. And that kind of volatility in the economic climate where we are already, with rising prices, with inflation, with higher interest rates, with all of those problems, is going to slightly compound it rather than alleviate it. And it'll create even more tension heading towards the elective conference, because then there'll be all kinds of posturing about, well, who did he appoint? Did he appoint that person because he's appeasing the RET faction? Did he, you know, did they inveigle themselves away? And everyone will start speculating about, is he in a weakened position or not, and so on. So, you know, I mean, this is really quite murky. As you can see, it's not transparent. They don't even know the name of the complainant. So, you know, hopefully there will be clarity in the coming days, inshallah.
All right, Ibrahim, as always, shukran for your time. Really appreciate it.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi
wa barakatuh. That was Ibrahim Fakir with this week's Asri.